B-Pod Studios.
Making the workday a little more entertaining.
Floppity flop, flop, flop. There.
It's Zoe and the Beetle on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Papa said, oh, if I get that boy, I'm gonna stick him in the house of detention. Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona.
Albert Breer is brought to you by Rockland Federal Credit Union. Times have been tough. Rockland Federal Credit Union can help with the products you need, a free on-demand credit monitoring tool, and the personal service you deserve. Visit rfcu.com today. It's good whistling, though. Albert, how are you doing this morning?
Hey, Bert.
What's up, guys? What's happening?
Clean the pipes this morning before you went out? Got a little hairdo there.
What?
Oh, a little flip of the hair up.
Is it look weird? I don't know.
Let me get something off your hair there.
No, yeah. No.
Take a look. Hold on. I look all right.
You look great. You look great.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
You look aces, kid. You look aces.
So heading towards this trade deadline, Bert, we just mentioned the Julio Jones stuff with Atlanta finally getting off the schneid, getting their first win. But where are they heading? You know, he's been there. Been there long. They haven't won. Money's pretty decent this year, but it goes up next year, and maybe you get this guy for about $40 million for the next 3 years. Is it doable here? Or more importantly, is Atlanta willing to take offers on him? What are you hearing?
So, I mean, it is the cash is actually fairly manageable over the next few years.
I agree.
You know, you're bringing in a prorated $11.2 million this year, whatever the prorated number is there, $15.3 million next year, and then $11.5 million in 2022. So the cash is manageable. That said, I think you're going to have to overpay for him. Because the Falcons right now are of a mind, and this is, you know, Rich McKay, their team president, running the show. Like, we want to give our next head coach and our next general manager the chance to make decisions on Matt Ryan, to make decisions on Julio Jones. And so if you're going to move them off of that, like, you're going to have to really make it worth their while.
So you're going to have to give them a one is in play then, right?
I mean, I would think that would be baseline based on what we've seen, like, star players go for over the last 3 or 4 years. Yep. What Laremy Tunsil went for, what Odell Beckham went for, what Jalen Ramsey went for.
Those guys are young, right, Bert?
Minka Fitzpatrick went for a one. Yeah, those guys are young. It's different, of course, but like Tunsil and Ramsey were, I mean, you still have to pay them, right? Like, so like you wound up having to give those guys big contracts after signing them or after trading for them. So I think that here's the thing is like Julio Jones, like for the Falcons, Julio Jones isn't going to lose value between now and the end of the year. You can still trade him after the year. Does it make your job more attractive to a top head coaching candidate, to a top general manager candidate, if you give those people the power to make that decision rather than making that decision for them now? I think that that's something you have to consider.
See, I wouldn't want to make that decision if I was the new guy.
Yeah, you know, I mean, well, no, but I mean, like, the
best player
is,
in the city. You know what I'm saying? Like, I
know
make
what you're
decision,
saying. You like, know? Like, the first move is to move the guy out of town. Wow. I understand that, but I still think, like, for the Falcons to not give the general manager, the new general manager, whoever that is, the new head coach, whoever that is, for them not to give those people the power to do it, you're going to have to make it worth it for the Falcons. And so, you know, I also think that there's the idea when you're in a market like that, listen, the people who are running that place right now are the business people. Like, can you afford to have the amount of apathy that you'll get if you wind up trading guys like that out of town? You think people don't care now. Like, what's it going to be like, you know, if you trade Julio Jones, if you trade Matt Ryan? So I think that plays into it. The other part of it, guys, if you're the Patriots, and I've sort of like had this in the back of my head the last 6 weeks as we've seen the ups and downs and everything else, I think this is always going to be like a sort of a clean the books kind of year, right? Like, financially, you're taking on $30 million in dead money this year. And you haven't drafted that well the last few years. Do you really want to kind of go back to, all right, we're all in for right now again, like based on what we've seen in the last 6 weeks of the season? Or do you want to go forward and say, you know what, like, we're probably not competing for a championship this year, so it's not worth it to sell out for a player for right now?
Okay, so if you're not going to sell out for a player and Julio Jones is a luxury item or a longer shot, who's like a realistic piece they could go for?
I, like, there are going to be a lot of receiver names out there. Now, the Texans – it's going to be interesting to see what they do, because I think it'll sort of telegraph the amount of power that Easterby is going to have going forward there. But they have names. I mean, like, you know, Will Fuller's in a contract year. I think they'd move him. Kenny Stills is in a contract year. I think they'd move him. Brandon Cooks makes a lot of money. I think they would talk. I think they would have that discussion. So there are three guys right there. You know, look at the New York Giants. Like, they've got veteran players, you know, that like a Golden Tate, he'd be somebody who'd be interesting. The Browns are contending right now. But David Joku, I think you can have him. I think he's available. The other team that I heard's going to be a seller that might surprise some people is the Minnesota Vikings. So do you go make a move for Kyle Rudolph now?
He's
somebody who could be available. So, like, I think that there are some names out there. The question, again, I think with all of these guys is, are you at a position right now where it's like, we're willing to take away from our draft capital for 2021 when we need young talent on the roster, and we're going to need young talent on the roster going forward? Are we willing to move capital for somebody who's going to help us win right now?
All right. Bert, if we are going to look at this from the clean the books years standpoint for the Patriots, is there anything else that maybe that fans would be expecting from this team that they're not going to see, or some other things that maybe they're going to be disappointed in? I mean, I think it's safe to say that people would like to see them get some more help at receiver, but if they're just kind of looking at this as almost like a reset, is there anything else that could be on the horizon in terms of disappointment for them?
Yeah. I mean, like, Hardy, I think the way you have to look at it is, are they better off going and getting Julio Jones or Golden Tate or Marvin Jones or Kenny Stills now than drafting a receiver in the second or third round in April and having that guy on the cheap for 4 years, right?
Yeah.
I think there's a real argument to be made. They're better off waiting.
Are you giving up players for those guys, though? See, that's the difference. Like, Julio Jones, you're giving up big draft picks.
Right.
Those guys, then all of a sudden you could lose a defensive back.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you got to give something up to get something.
Yeah, or even a middle round pick. I mean, there's give and take here, where it's like, because the Patriots, here's what I would say, Hardy, because the Patriots have been in this win now mode forever, we've conditioned ourselves to thinking, all right, they get to the trade deadline, sell out, go get help, get somebody who can help you in January. Are you there right now? Like, I would have said, you want to get Cam some help 2 or 3 weeks ago. After I watched on Sunday, what I watched on Sunday against Denver, I'm not sure. I look at it and I say, you've gotten really old in a lot of key spots. You're going to need those draft picks, right? Mm-hmm. Look at the age of some of the guys that are even now, even after Chung and Hightower opted out, Jason McCourty, Devin McCourty, you're still older. You're still older in a lot of key spots on this roster. And to me, you're still relying on somebody like Rex Burkhead. I just think that there's an overall need to find young cornerstones. And if you're dealing away draft capital to go get help for right now, you're undercutting your ability to do that.
But part of the problem with that too, Bert, is the fact that, they were winning, but I wouldn't call it a win now mentality. And that's been going on for years. Jonathan Kraft telling Felger Maz at the Super Bowl years ago, no, we'd rather be in the hunt rather than going all in. And there have been exceptions, you know, Darrell Revis here for a year, and they tried with Antonio Brown, but he certainly didn't do anything in an effort to help them win. So they have run this football team from a win year after year mentality as opposed to a win now mentality. So I think
Hardy, you still look like that. I'm not even talking about the Julio type of move, though. Like, the last few years, they traded for Philip Dorsett, they traded for Mohamed Sanu, they traded for Kyle Van Noy. Some of those have worked out, others haven't, but they've been pretty willing, you know, over the last few years. Josh Gordon, they brought him in. They've been pretty willing over the last few years to deal off draft capital to go and get somebody who can help them right now.
Yep.
And I just think that stuff matters. We focus so much in on the first round picks, right? Well, look at some of the guys they got, the offensive lineman they drafted out of Michigan. He's playing now. You know what I mean? And so we tend to ignore the fourth and fifth round picks. When you really look at it, those can be really valuable too. And I think especially so when you're relying on older players in a lot of key spots in your roster, you know, again, it's just like they've, to me, one of the reasons why like you brought Chung back, why you brought Hightower back, why you brought Devin McCourty back, why you brought Jason McCourty back. I mean, those guys can still play, but one of the reasons like you brought them back is because you haven't developed young guys behind them. Like if you want to go back to that Super Bowl team in 14, right? They won with Darrell Revis and Brandon Browner at corner. You know who was behind those guys?
Butler.
Malcolm Butler and Logan Ryan. You won
and Arrington,
with,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you won with Sebastian Vollmer at right tackle. Who was behind him at right tackle? Marcus Cannon. You won with who was the God, the back who went to the third down back who went
to Vereen.
Great. You won with Vereen. Who was behind him? James White. We didn't even think James White could play at that point, right?
Like, yeah, so, Wisconsin runner.
like back then, right? Like 6-7 years ago, they were able to let a lot of guys go because they had young players coming up behind them. Like if you notice over the last 2-4 years, they're hanging on to guys longer. And I think part of the reason why is because they haven't been as good developing young guys behind those players, which, you know, again, organizationally, if you're looking at this, I think one of the things you have to look at is maybe you start to need to value those draft picks so you can build up what's a quote unquote farm system under the older guys.
All right. Jones, I know you had something too, but we got to step aside because Stephon Gilmore is now set to join us at 11:20. So we'll speak with the Patriots corner here, and then Burt will still be with us up until noontime here on Zolak and Bertrand.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is why you do the show. You take chances, you give takes. Sometimes they blow up in your face. You look like a complete idiot. We've all been there.
The pie in your face.
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Get you one way or another. Find
you. You know, same era, though. The Go-Go's.
This is not Go-Go.
No, one of the Go-Go's, though, is celebrating a birthday today. The oldest Go-Go. How old do you think the oldest Go-Go is today?
Oh, gotta be.
57.
I was gonna say 60.
67 years old.
That's disgusting.
Wow.
No, I mean, it's not disgusting.
No, say it. You're disgusted.
Holds the oldest Spice Girl right now?
Charlotte Caffey is her name. She's 67 years old today.
Oldest Spice Girl's got to be.
Oldest Spice Girl's got to be.
40s? Early 40s.
Which Spice Girl do you think is the oldest? I'm going to go with Sporty.
Oh, put me down for Posh. I was going to go with Posh.
She had a lot of work done.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't mean she's not old.
Yeah, that might mean she is old.
We'll ask Stephon Gilmore who he thinks the oldest Spice Girl is as he joins us now.
He's
brought to you by Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Steph Gilmore, if you had to guess who the oldest Spice Girl is, who would it be?
Say it again.
No, I'm just on the. We're having a totally different
Jerry
conversation.
Hullwell.
What I really want to know, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. Feel normal. I don't feel nothing. Just, you know, excited for the week and get to practice and stuff. So I'm excited for the week we got coming up.
Yeah, I mean, it's finally great to practice. And we've heard a lot about this, you know, and you guys have done all the virtual stuff. But how floored were you when you got the call that, like, hey, you tested positive? Like, because I know you're asymptomatic, but, like, were you ticked off? Was just like, you got to be kidding me? What was your reaction when you got that notice?
I mean, I was shocked because I didn't feel nothing.
Right.
So that's the thing that, you know, you have to deal with. But I was shocked, but luckily I didn't miss a game, and I was able to play and not miss a game. So I'm over it now. I'm just looking forward to the future.
So there's been a lot of confusion on our end, on the talk show radio side, and you're just the person to clear it up. the Friday before the Chiefs game, there have been reports that have been pushed back on that you and Stefon, you and Cam Newton, rather, were together prior to that game, whether it was a dinner in, a dinner out, whether it was a hangout. Were you guys together at all on that Friday outside of the facility, away from the facility?
I don't want to get into that. Just, you know, it's done. It's over with. So we passed it. So I'm just looking forward to, you know, playing in San Francisco.
But you do get why people are interested, right? Just because if you were together and there's been a bit of an outbreak with the team, that may, not that you guys were doing anything wrong, just that may explain sort of the contact tracing, like, sort of explain where it came from, because we know Cam was first.
Yeah, I'm just saying it doesn't matter right now. It's, you know, it's, we pass it. Our team looking forward to this week, so it's, whatever happened to us personally, it is what it is. It's just, we pass it and we over it, so.
All right, well, you know, and we're going to get to San Francisco, but, you know, along those same lines, I think a lot of people think about this. Man, if I test positive, is there a chance I literally feel nothing?
Yeah.
Is that where you were? Like, you had the positive test, but did you remain totally asymptomatic the entire time?
Yeah, I was asymptomatic. I didn't feel nothing. I just felt like my normal self. You know, that's the weird thing about it, that you can be positive and get past it to someone that you don't feel nothing. So that's why you have to be careful, you know, protect other people.
Hey, Steph, so I'm sitting there and I'm calling these games at home. Obviously, I'm not traveling with the team. You know, we're not doing the road games. And the one part I can't get past is how, you know, not having fans and just, I don't want to say the deadness in the stadium, but you guys are veterans know how to create, you know, your own juice. You know, you guys are pros at it. But for these young kids, and there's times it seems like, and Matt Slater talked about, we need sense of urgency. We need to create that for ourselves. How hard is that, you know, as a group, as a team, especially for these young guys that are new in the league, and you walk in and there's an empty stadium and you got to go out and play, you know, at a premium. How tough is that?
It's tough. It's tough for all of us. You know, used to playing in front of a lot of fans and, you know, hearing the crowd and going out and competing. It's just that energy, but, you know, we have to bring our own energy. We have to, when we make plays, we have to, you know, cheer each other on and try to find other ways to, you know, bring that sense of urgency and the energy back. Sometimes the fans does it when you make a play, but, you know, we got each other and, we're the ones playing in between the lines, and we got to support each other and trust each other and be our own fans.
I don't know if the guys have asked you this previously, so forgive me if you've been asked this before, but it seems like this year there's been a lot of flags thrown on you this year, more so than we've seen in the past. Is that something that you go back and you watch the tape and you agree with? Is that something where you feel like, you know, the refs maybe have a target on you? How do you feel about some of the calls that have gone against you this year?
I just feel like it's, you know, I'm going to keep playing my game, but it's a lot of soft calls. Sometimes it's an offensive lead, you know, a guy push off, they don't call it. And, you know, we get a little physical with them, and that's the first thing they want to do. So I want to just keep playing my game, and, you know, and I want to play physical, play aggressive, because that's what my team, you know, that's why I'm out there. That's what my team want me to do. So that's what I'm going to do.
All right. So what's your major concern about San Francisco as you prepare personally for this game? What's your biggest concern about the game on Sunday?
They got a great team. You know, they can run the football. You know, they can throw it. They're very balanced. So you can't really play a certain way. You have to play great all the way around. So that's one thing that stick out to me with them, that they can do it all.
When you look at Kittle, and you've played against some good tight ends already this year, you got a lot of good tight ends you guys are facing this year. How problematic is that when you have a tight end can pretty much do everything, along with the multiple formations and motion they're gonna throw at you guys?
Oh yeah, he's a great tight end. Probably he can do it all: block, run, yards after catch, quick. He can do everything. So bring that as far as doing everything a tight end can do. So it's going to be a big challenge for us.
It's better than Kelsey, huh?
I think. Yeah. I feel like he do a lot.
Yeah.
You know, he blocks. He does it all. So, you know, anytime you got a guy like that, it's, you know, it's a tough challenge.
You didn't overlap a ton with Garoppolo when he was here, but how much do you draw on, you know, what you saw on the practice field going against him when you get ready for a game like this, and how do you balance that with, you know, what you've seen from him this year and years past in San Francisco?
He has a quick release. That's one thing that stuck out with him. He can get it out really fast, and you know, he's a smart guy. He's seen a lot of football. I was with him for a little while before he got traded. You know, he made some throws, tough throws in practice. So it's going to be a big challenge for us as a defense. Everybody got to play together and go out there and play a great game to come out with a win.
Ladies like him, don't they?
Yeah, they do. he's young, you know.
Got those teeth.
Handsome.
Quarterback.
Yeah. Handsome.
Yeah.
Oh, dreamy.
Yep.
Oh, you know what to do. Yeah. He's not going to look so pretty afterward. After yeah. Sunday,
Yeah, no double pumps. Double pumps this week.
Stephon Gilmore, we appreciate the time as always. I'm glad you're feeling fine, and I guess even more glad to hear that you always felt fine throughout the positive.
Glad
test.
You're practicing.
Yeah, yeah. Glad, and good to be practicing all that stuff. So thanks again, and good luck on Sunday.
Appreciate it.
All right,
thank
see you, Steph. There he goes. Stephon Gilmore joining us there on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Jones with another hub headline here. Albert's been waiting.
Yep.
So Burt Breer will rejoin us, I should say, here in just a couple of minutes here on Zolak and Bertrand.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Wake up, lip readers.
Jacob in Dorchester, are you an expert lip reader?
It's the show whose name is on everyone's lips.
Right.
Zolak and Bertrand.
Well, you might need the lip reading because you don't listen.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
I don't know if the guys have asked you this previously, so forgive me if you've been asked this before, but the it seems like this year there's been a lot of flags thrown on you this year. Is that something that you go back and you watch the tape and you agree with? Is that something where you feel like, you know, the refs maybe have a target on you? How do you feel about some of the calls that have gone against you this year?
There's nothing better when you're doing an interview and someone's taking a dump.
One or two. I should have just changed two. My question on the fly.
That's a two, dude.
No, but I'm saying I should have adjusted to that there. Steph, one or two.
I feel responsible for this. I gotta tell you, know my buddy Steve.
Yeah.
He has told me for years because, you know, we haven't lived in the same
state. I love being on the phone when I'm on it, though.
We haven't lived in the same state now for 20-plus years, but when we talk on the phone, he said, there's something about your voice. He says, I have to do that now.
Oh.
It's like when we talk. So maybe there's something.
That's creepy.
It could be my voice. I don't think it is.
No.
But it seems like this year there's been a lot of flags thrown on you.
We need the door squeak, though, Jim. Because that, I mean,
is that something that you go back and you watch the tape and you agree?
Yep. That's not it.
He's either in a haunted house or he just, he's using a bathroom stall.
It's haunted now.
Did you guys see the ESPN interview that was like going around the internet yesterday with John Wall?
No.
Yes.
So they actually like, their fantasy football show. I guess he's a Cowboys.
Was
fan,
he playing
right?
Craps?
Their fantasy football show had him on like before the Cowboys game to talk about the Cowboys.
Yeah.
And he was like literally like playing spades during the interview. Like you could see him like, you know, kind of like putting cards on the table and talking to the dealer. It was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, Albert Breer, by the way, back with us now on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Zolak and Bertrand. Jones is here. I'm in for Beadle. Let's get back to the Patriots with you, Bert, and talk a little bit about Cam Newton. The game on Sunday. I know you've had a chance to dissect it and talk about it a lot. There were certain things about that game where people wonder, is that a lack of practice? Is that just a lack of field sense sometimes? I mean, the batted balls. What did you see out of Cam Newton's performance on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't his best. And I think one of the things that sort of stuck out to me was, like the lack of help that he has. And, you know, we talked about this in the first segment where, like, they haven't developed a lot of, like, good young talent. And I think you're starting to see that now. And, on top of, like, all of the weird mental errors that we saw from the team in general on Sunday, you watch – you know, like,
why wasn't he pulling a trigger on the shorts? That's what, you know, if you're feeling the pressure, and I think he didn't want to get hit. It felt like he didn't want to get hit on Sunday. And there was, when you go back and watch it again, like, there's some slants there. There's Asiasi out in the flat a couple times.
Yeah, it's a different offense, too.
He hung on to the ball. You know?
And that's the other thing. It's a different offense. And I think that they were probably, you know, they were playing in long yardage a little bit more. And, I hate to be like
a Fangio
team guy, but like Fangio throws a lot of stuff at you. Now, I don't think he has a very good team. You know, we went over that last week, but like he is challenging from a scheme standpoint. You know, in fact, that's like why some of his assistants have gotten picked off the last couple of years is because, you know, offensive coaches look at him and say that guy's the toughest guy to play against. So I want to go and bring his guys in. So, you know, I think there's a sort of like a mix of everything. I also think that there's, you know, like, when you are in that situation, and Zoe, you can speak to this, and, you know, having talked to quarterbacks about this in the past, like when you're starting to feel the heat and you're not sure what you're looking at, you're going to go to guys that you have a relationship with or that you feel you can rely on. And I don't know that Cam's there with any of the guys that he's playing with right now. And that could be a problem too. You know, we're so used to,
well, I thought it was Nikhil after week two.
And we're so used to, but Nikhil failed him in that game too. I mean, you know, the pick late in the game, and I'm looking at it now. I have it written down here, was that he falls down on that play.
I think it would have still got picked off if it wasn't tipped.
It might have. Yeah, it's possible. But I mean, like, you look at, like, so like that's the thing is, like, we've conditioned ourselves over the last 20 years to watching Tom Brady go out there and he can make it work with anybody. Right. Like, I think maybe this is a time to have an appreciation for that too. Like that, there were circumstances where, I mean, Brady, like, I remember, like, at one point he was throwing to Austin Collie. You remember the show ponies play was to Kembrell Tompkins, right?
Yeah.
Like, right. So he could make it work with so many different guys. I think people here have gotten conditioned to thinking, oh, well, the quarterback should just be able to make it work with whoever you roll out there. Well, that's not how it works. Like, that's why Tom Brady was so great. And so I do think that there's, you know, a piece of this is Cam getting used to the offense. I think there's another piece of it too, though. Like, I don't know, like, how much Cam feels like he can rely on those sorts of guys when, you know, he's not quite sure what he's looking at, when he has to hesitate a second. Yeah. So I think it takes time to build those relationships, but I think there's also a talent issue out there.
What? I agree with that.
What's wrong with Edelman?
Age? I mean, he's 34. He's taken a lot of hits.
But he's 34 when he caught 180 yards against the Seahawks week two.
Yeah, I mean, like, right. And now he's taken on three more weeks of damage. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, how many slot receivers have we seen make it this far?
It's his knee.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely some injury stuff going on.
It's not shoulder. It's not head. It's his knee.
Yeah, I mean, like, there are so few guys. I mean, like, at this age, I think the age that Edelman's at, I think Welker was done, right? I think Troy Brown was done. Like, those guys, like, the physical toll that playing that position takes, I mean, generally, they're little guys who are running around in the land of giants, right? They're running around among linebackers and safeties, and eventually you're going to get to that point with a player like Edelman. And so, you know, I do think that the physical toll's sort of starting to catch up to him. You know, and then, of course, like, there's that other piece of it that I just referenced with Cam, which is you had all that background with Brady. You worked with him for all of those years. And, you know, losing that now and having to kind of break in with a new quarterback, I think, is a challenge.
Bert, we've talked about this game this weekend as being one of the more important regular season games, just in terms of record, but also what it means to go up against the 49ers and Jimmy Garoppolo and what it says about where the team is now. Where would you rank this in terms of importance for a regular season game for the Patriots?
I think it's important because the trade deadline is 9 days after it. And so, you know, I think that it could, to some degree, you know, dictate the, you know, how you're going to approach, you know, build, like, the team going forward. You know, if you were going to be a buyer, You know, I do think like putting something impressive on tape on Sunday would bolster the case for doing that, right? Like if you have the idea in your head, okay, we're going to go get Cam a tight end or we're going to go get Cam a receiver, you know, then playing really well on Sunday would, you know, bolster the idea that like it's worth doing that. If you go out and you look like you did against Denver, like I would argue maybe it makes no sense to go out and be a buyer. Maybe it makes more sense then to just kind of like go back to the drawing board here and say to yourself, okay, like this was the year we were turning the page anyway, so let's just stand pat. So I think from that standpoint, it's important. And, you know, then of course, I mean, there's the whole, you know, the whole idea that Jimmy's on the other side of this, I think is really interesting because of Bill's obvious love for him.
Is it must win for them? It is. They're staring at 2-4. If not,
well, I don't know. Well, I mean, like, is Buffalo, four, gonna, is Buffalo going to run away with the division?
No.
I mean,
they took a step back, huh?
They have the Jets this week, though, so that helps.
I mean, I still think Buffalo is like a 10, 11, 12 win team. So if you have, you know, if you have four losses with 10 games left, then to get to 10 wins, you got to go 8-2. So
what happened to Big Paul Bunyan, our quarterback, the other night? Took a little step back, huh?
Yeah, I thought he took a step back. Yeah, I actually thought he looked okay in the Titans game. Like, I even though they lost that game, I didn't think
made better throws. Yeah,
he looked worse on Monday night against the Chiefs, no question. So, like, they have some work to do there, and you know, defensively, they've got to get a lot better. They are underachieving big time on that side of the ball. I still think, like, again, I still think Buffalo's like a double digit win team. So, if you lose this game, your margin for error is like shaved down to almost nothing.
All right, let's go around the league a little bit. We'll talk about what's happening with the Jets. We'll also talk about some other teams in the league with Albert Breer, who joins us here on Zolak and Bertrand. More to come. Stay with us.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is how the pros.
That's great. Thank you, Beef. You're proud of yourself.
Do Sports Talk Radio.
Your microphone is down. Hey, Marconi.
Just hit the button.
Turn the mic up.
I'm just
Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Well, I feel bad that we didn't play better than we played last night and that we're sitting here at 2-4. We can compete at a higher level than we've been competing. Because we're shooting our own self in the foot. That doesn't mean, though, that week in, week out, here in one of the most unique experiences I've ever had in sport, and that's competing during the times that we're in, because of the times we're in, I don't want to basically say this is what we've got.
That was an excerpt from the Jerry Jones program, which he is good enough to call into at least once a week.
Jones is right. It's pretty cool to get that. A little more zone, a little more man.
I would like, I would, look, yeah. I never want you to leave. I never want you to leave Boston or the Sports Hub or anything, but should you be afforded the opportunity, you.
Who are you talking to, me or Zone?
I'm talking to you.
Oh, Adam. Me. Oh, you're kicking me out. Okay.
Yeah, the Jones and Jones show, I think, would be fantastic. And you have the experience of already hosting a show where you were not the named
Shaughnessy
number one guy.
Yeah.
You were the, you
this
know,
would be closer. This would be closer.
Yes. You were the lead on a show that didn't have your name on it necessarily.
Yeah. Bert, so, Bert,
Shaughnessy show.
Bert was well-versed in that show. He used to talk before I did every Saturday.
Yeah. So
he swore like first. Remember when Bert was on air for the first time and he swore like four times in the first hour? Oh,
welcoming in.
That wasn't the first time.
Yeah, it was.
Hey.
Was it?
Welcome,
yeah.
Welcome into the Dan Shaughnessy show.
It was like July, Bert, and with the old Sports Hub and the old building.
Okay. So what? I had like, I could see where maybe I would have.
Shaughnessy was all fired up. You asked Gilmore about the dinner, so we missed Dan.
We got Albert Breer right out of the chute.
In your defense, it was a long time ago. You were probably still loopy from the painkillers after you got shot in the leg with a rubber bullet. But Albert.
That was a long, long time ago.
Well, we've been on the air for a long time. So we just heard Jerry Jones. Let me throw something out. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was Manish this morning on with Toucher and Rich, or maybe if Fred said it, or somebody brought up the idea. All right, the Jets, they're in bad shape. what if they just traded Sam Darnold right now and traded him to the Cowboys? The Cowboys need a quarterback, and he ends up working out down there in Dallas, and then old Jair doesn't have to give Dak Prescott the money coming off an injury, and all of a sudden there's a big shuffle like that. You like that notion?
That's a fun idea. It's very unrealistic.
Why? Okay, well, break down the levels of unrealistic about that. What's the most unrealistic, that the Jets would trade Sam Darnold at this point?
I think the Jets potentially could trade Sam Darnold, but I think if they trade Sam Darnold, it'll be because they have the first overall pick and because the kid from Clemson is a generational prospect. I don't know that they would trade...
Like Mookie Betts.
Yeah, like I don't know if they would trade Sam Darnold if they had the second or third pick and it meant Justin Fields or Trey Lance. I'm almost certain they would trade Sam Darnold if they had the first pick. So we don't know that they're going to have the first pick, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, they could screw up and win a couple of games. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we saw them screw it up a few years ago when they had to trade up to get Darnold in the first place. So I think it's unrealistic from that standpoint. I also think it's unrealistic that the Cowboys are going to trade for Sam Darnold based on how they feel about Dak Prescott going forward. So I know that contract negotiation hasn't gone great, but
what are you hearing on that injury? You hearing anything like how the severity of it? I mean, obviously it looked bad.
Everybody sounds like he's going to come back, right? That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, so Stephen Jones told me last week like that it was going to be 4 to 6 month injury. That's the information you've got now.
How is that it?
Clean break. Pop it back in to get the screws in.
Yeah.
You get now, past like, his infection.
Now there's still the risk of infection, which, you know, like that's what Alex Smith went through.
Oh God.
So there's still that risk that could happen and you can have setbacks over time. But like Tua, like for example, like Tua Tagovailoa is a good example of somebody who had a very, very serious injury where things just sort of went right and he was able to get back the next year. So like, I think the hope for Dak is that, and their plan is right now to tag him again and then try to work out a long-term deal. But I think Dak's still very much in the plans for the Cowboys. And then Sam Darnold for the Jets, I think everything with him is going to be contingent on where they're drafting in April.
One more Cowboy question. There's rumblings coming out down there, like the unnamed players talking about how poorly they are coached, and that's coming off a Garrett coach team.
So here's what's interesting about that, right? So the three guys that they really looked at, the Cowboys looked at last year, as far as who's going to be our next head coach, Mike McCarthy, Ron Rivera, Marvin Lewis. Obvious what those guys have in common, right? All three of those guys have previous head coaching experience, have been successful as head coaches. The idea was when they hired McCarthy, we have a roster that we believe can win right now, so we can't mess around at all. Like, we need to have a guy who can come in and hit the ground running. So, like, if that was the idea, like, how bad is that? This is where we are after 6 weeks. Like, if you've made this hire for right now, like, how big of an indictment is that on Mike McCarthy? And, oh, by the way, like, one of the guys that they've loved forever, the Dallas has loved forever, is Lincoln Riley, the Oklahoma coach. Well, if you look at the other sideline on Monday night, do you think Jerry might have been looking longingly over at the other sideline? He's a native Texan who came from the college level, who's good with quarterbacks, who's got a really, you know, really, really good offensive mind, who had a team bought in, whose, you know, franchise is now on an upward trajectory. So I'm just saying, like,
Cliff. Yeah.
That was Cliff. And like, so
another
like,
good Bill draft pick.
Cliff have a lot of, they have a lot of similarities. So if you look at the totality of this, it's like the idea was to win right now. And Mike McCarthy clearly isn't doing that. So, you know, he's failed at that. And now you look at like what kind of the alternative was if they had gone in the other direction, which, you know, would have been trying to get Lincoln Riley, crash a Brinks truck in Lincoln Riley's house. Well, there was an example of how it worked somewhere else right in front of Jerry's face on Monday night.
You mentioned too a few moments ago, just shifting gears away from the Cowboys. Why are the Dolphins doing that? Like, was this was the plan all along? It seems, but how do you go to Tua instead of sticking with Fitzpatrick when he's played well? A, and the team's been decent. B, like, aren't you worried about a team wide locker room letdown by going to the rookie?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the first part of this is pretty like simple, and Zoe, I think you'd agree with this. Like, I don't think Flo does this unless Tua is practicing well, doing well in the meetings.
Like, he sees a spark there or something.
I don't think Flo would do this if he doesn't feel like he can sell it to his locker room.
He had a good understanding with Ryan, like, hey, you know,
right,
we're paying you and I'm keeping you here this year, but we're eventually going to go to him. And maybe that was talked about prior to the start of the season.
Yeah, and this
when he
is
was
why
right,
Fitz
when he was
so,
healthy.
This is why Fitz keeps getting work, by the way, guys. Like, your Josh McCowns, your Derek Anderson.
Yeah.
The reason those guys keep getting work is
I'm going to be interested in him here next year if things don't work out here this year.
They're good for young quarterbacks. Like, you put that guy in the room, he understands the dynamics. He understands he's not the long-term answer, and he's good for that guy. What I like about what the Dolphins did here, though, how do first-round quarterbacks normally get in if they're not starting week one? They normally get in because everything's falling apart, right? Like, normally they go to bad teams, and then if they're sitting at the start of the year, the team winds up like 1-6, and it's like, oh, well, you know, we're screwed now, so like, let's just throw the young guy in, and then that young guy is thrown into a terrible situation, right? The Dolphins are doing the opposite here. The Dolphins are saying, okay, we're starting to play well. We're hitting our bye week. This is a great spot to put our young guy in. If we still think we're a year or two away from truly contending, which I think that they internally believe that, it's like, you're probably going to look like, what's best for Tua Tagovailoa? Where can we give him the best situation? And this is a great situation to put him into, right? The team's playing well. They've won a couple of games in a row. You're at your bye week. Like, it's just, from that standpoint, I think it's actually really smart to do it this way. If you don't think you're a real contender this year, which, again, I think the Dolphins still feel like they're a year or two away.
All right, there's another team in the AFC East that was playing well, but now they've had a couple of games here in the month of October that Zoe has rightly pointed out and, dare I say, predicted, not looking too good. So we'll
Patriots?
Talk.
Welcome to October.
Who said the Patriots? Yeah, Jones.
Oh.
How dare you?
Oh. Headlines, Jones, headlines.
Oh.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Well, you're at work. Scott Zolak.
I think it's a disaster.
Mark Bertrand.
I know. I want to get it out.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Allen retreats. Here comes Chris Jones, but he floats a pass over the middle. It's going to be intercepted. Dirty Dan Sorensen with the pick. A one-handed grab and the eighth pick of Dirty Dan's career.
The Bills make me want to shout. Kick your heels up and shout. Throw your hands up and shout.
Oh, they're making it happen, all right. Zolak and Bertrand, Hardy and Frabito, Adam Jones is here. Albert Breer with us for one more segment. Buffalo Bills, lighting the world on fire. They were 4-0 to start the season. They've lost two in a row. Bert, what's happening in Buffalo?
You ever been to game up there, Jones, where people just stand in their own trash in fecal matter?
No. I mean, it sounds awesome, but no, I've never been, no.
Where they warm their hands in certain places?
Jonesy Pigskin's got to make the trip.
Someday.
It's a beautiful thing. I love Buffalo fans.
It's awesome, yeah. It's very, like, that's the one place where the real fans haven't been priced out, I would say. Fair to say so?
Yeah. It's one place where you could drive your home to a game and party in it and then drive it back. You know?
All right. Is there cause for concern in Buffalo right now?
Yeah, I think part of it was injuries, right? So they played without Tre'Davious White against the Titans. They've had issues on their defensive backfield in general and injuries over the last few weeks. And, you know, playing against a Tennessee team that, like, Brian Tannehill, I'm not sure people realize, like, how well he's played over the last year. But going up against him and then Pat Mahomes, I think that's going to create an issue. So part of it is that. I still think that there's been like some discipline issues the last couple of weeks too that I think we're not really used to seeing from a Sean McDermott team. So my radar's up there and Josh Allen's been more up and down. And so there is reason for concern. They've still got, a really good roster, a lot of ascending young players, but the injury issue on defense, the way the defense is played in general, and then, you know, like Allen's up and downs, I think at least give you some reason to think, maybe this is more of a 9 or 10 win team than the 12 win team that we thought it was a few weeks ago.
Well, I think you hit on it. Like the first sign of adversity, or maybe the second sign, because it was their second loss that they experienced. They're doing things that you're not expecting from McDermott coach team. The late hit out of bounds. Which one of them will be the easiest call that official will have to make all year. It was egregious. And then Diggs walking back
to the line of scrimmage when, you know, the game is still in the, you know, the outcome, the issue was still in doubt. And, you know, you make a play here, you get a playoff, and instead just it seems like they kind of checked out at what was only going to be their second loss, as you said, Bert, against a good team. It just makes you wonder what, like, the makeup of this team is if they start acting like that when they're not even suffering a loss. They're just losing to a good team. It's like, are you going to fight this thing out, or are you automatically going to start, you know, playing Polly Pissy Pants and start acting like you're really not meant to be here? Because that's kind of what they look like.
It's weird, too, because I think, like, some of the COVID circumstances, I think it's starting to get to some people. I thought Bill mentioning the practice thing, I thought that was super out of character. I don't know what you guys thought, but I thought when he brought that up,
which time,
like on
last
Sunday
week,
after the game,
last week today,
like when he brought that up, like that was Monday. I can imagine he feels that way. I'm surprised that he said it though. You know what I mean? Like, cause it's like, that kind of felt like you're offering your players up an excuse, which, I mean, to me, like that seemed out of character for Bill to do that. And so the Patriots have been through it, obviously.
I think it's frustration, too.
Stephen Cam, yeah, right. Like, so look at Buffalo, though. Buffalo didn't even have an outbreak. Yet, like, if you go back 10 days, at one point, they were actually having to prepare for the Titans and the Chiefs at the same time because we weren't sure if they were going to play the Titans on Tuesday or the Chiefs on Thursday. So that fouled up their preparation for that week. And then coming off of that Tuesday night game, that weird Tuesday night game, now they got to play on consecutive short weeks because it's Tuesday, Monday, Sunday, right? Like, so you start to wonder with some of these things, like, are the circumstances, how weird everything is and how routine's being thrown off, like, if these sorts of things are starting to get to some people, you know? And so it's just something I've sort of noticed the last couple of weeks with the teams that have been affected by it. And that's why, quite honestly, that's why I've been so impressed with the Titans, because, like, Mike Vrabel, say what you will about what happened in that building or whatever, like, his team has been locked in through all of this.
He was not happy about the reporting on the third field. We have audio of that. I don't know if you guys caught that.
Oh, no.
He got a little testy with a reporter who asked him a question about something that was happening on a field that they're not supposed to report on. I don't know what Bert, you probably know what all the protocols are for, you know, different teams and what you're allowed to
say.
Yeah, but there was something. We'll get to that a little bit later on.
Hmm. So, Bert, we just came up with this. Contenders, pretenders, right? Oh. We're a month in.
It's catchy.
I feel like this has the potential to catch on. It sounds like you believe Buffalo is a contender, though, right? You still think they're a 10, 12-win team, so you're not writing them off?
No, I think they're still, I mean, like, there's still a lot of good there. And, you know, again, you know, once they get healthier in the secondary, if they can return to some level of normalcy, like, I thought, like, the Josh Allen we saw at the start of the Tennessee game and really the couple weeks before that, like, I thought his development was off the charts. And I think that's in large part thanks to a guy who used to be here in Brian Daboll, who I think's done a great job with him. So I think they're very much a contender, and I expect them to probably win the division and have somewhere between 10 and 12 wins.
How about another 4-2 team in the Cleveland Browns? Contender, pretender.
Ooh,
that's a tough one. I would say pretender based on what we saw on Sunday. And I just think that they, given the moment, that's a big rivalry game in that area of the country, as big a game as they've played, that franchise has played in a long time. They just got blown off the field. And
how about that team they played?
The Steelers are rolling. And I don't think that – and Tomlin's another one right there with Vrabel. They've handled the circumstances of all of this really well. But I think, you know, to me, Cleveland's that team that, like, I think you're going to continue to see glimmers of what they might be, but I still think they're probably about a year away.
I got another 4-2 team.
Ooh.
Contender or pretender, Indianapolis Colts.
They're 4-2.
4-2.
Yeah, I guess I have to say pretender because they lost to the Browns the week before, and I just called the Browns a pretender.
Transitive contender.
What
pretender.
If that quarterback so gets hot,
methodology.
Though? What if that quarterback gets hot?
When you're talking about, like, being at the highest level, pretender. But they sort of strike me as the team that's going to wind up with that seventh seed. You know what I mean? Like, they're the team that's, like, I think could wind up getting it. Like, they've got a – if they had Andrew Luck right now – You know, and I know that's going to be the big thing that's going to hang over them until they find the next one. But if they had Andrew Luck right now, I think that that's a roster that you could win 12 or 13 games with. I just don't know how much Phillip Rivers has left.
Okay. How about Tampa Bay? They're 4-2. They're in the 4-2 grouping. Oh. Contender, pretender.
Contender. Yeah. Like that defense.
I didn't even get that. Well, he's just jumping the gun on me. Well, what if I threw a different question
at him? It's not even about...
How about a different team that he has to think about?
It's not even about Brady and the offense. Like, this reminds me a lot. This reminds me a lot of the situation Brett Favre was in 2009. Not the second year in Minnesota, the first year in Minnesota, when he had that great year and they wound up in the NFC title game because that roster was so well-rounded. The defense looks like it's better than the offense right now. If you guys watch that game against the Packers...
Well, quarterback can't count to four.
I mean, you'd say you would say that Tampa was better on the defensive side of the ball. And they've got horses on that side. Like the two linebackers, White and David, are excellent. A lot of good veteran players on their front and good young players in the secondary. And like they don't even need Tom to throw for 300 yards to win because the running game's rolling now too. So I think they're very much a contender.
Let me show you how this is done.
Yes, okay. I failed there. I came up with a catchy name and everything, and I failed.
And just to keep the playing field level, I'll stick with the 4-2 teams here.
Oh,
the Los Angeles Rams.
Pretender. Come on,
his defense ain't the same. Look at him think about it.
That defense
is thinking about it.
I think pretender.
Hardy's so good at this.
Attaboy.
I'd say pretender. I think Seattle wins that division. Yep. The Rams could be like my Colts equivalent for the NFC, where they could be the team that sneaks in at 7 wins. Like I think the Rams, they went through a little bit of a reset this offseason where they basically remade the entire coaching staff. And so I think you're going to see them, like you're going to see them pop up and like have the sort of game they had again, like the second half they had against Buffalo. And then I think you're going to see it kind of come back to the mean a little bit. So I think they're probably like an off season of free agent signings and draft picks away from being where they need to be, back where they need to be.
And just to show you, I'm not, you know, playing favorites with the 4-2 teams. I could go Cardinals also, but I think they're absolute pretenders. I mean, one of their losses is to the Lions, you know.
And that's your bar, right, is the Lions?
Well, and we were talking about Kyler Murray and how bad he looked in that win over the Cowboys.
Hardy,
what?
I think your hometown Lions are only a half game out of the playoff picture.
Stop it. Stop.
I think that's true.
Don't tease.
Like, it's a game, or that's your hometown team, right? Like, so like, yes. I think they're only a half game out of the playoff picture right now.
Did Matt Patricia save his job here recently? I mean, was he on the outs?
It's unpredictable. I think that they're definitely feeling the heat. I think it's unpredictable right now because the owner is new. The daughter actually, you know, became the controlling owner in the off season. And whenever there's somebody new in charge, it's sort of like you don't really know how they're going to handle it. You know, like the same way you didn't know like how Martha Ford was going to handle it when she got the team from her husband. Now you don't know how the daughter's really going to handle this going forward. So, you know, his job is certainly on the line. I think everyone in football ops, their jobs are all on the line. Whether or not they would do something in midseason, I think is sort of up in the air because the owner doesn't have track record.
All right, Bert. We appreciate the time as always. Thanks for sticking for an extra segment. It's always good to talk to you.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
See you, Bert.
There goes Albert Breer.
Hey, can I read you Detroit's schedule?
Yeah. Coming up? Yeah.
At Jacksonville.
They won.
Okay, so they won that. So they're at Atlanta.
Yep.
Winnable game. At Indianapolis, winnable game.
Nope. Loss.
No, they're home against Indianapolis.
Okay. Vikings the next week at Vikings.
Loss.
Winnable.
Loss.
Come on. Vikings are terrible this year.
Home against the Washington football team.
Loss.
Stop it.
Panthers after that.
Loss.
Houston.
Loss.
Tough ending to the schedule.
Titans, Bucks.
Green Bay.
Yeah, it's Green Bay, Titans,
Chicago.
Bucks.
Chicago's good.
It's Patricia. They're all losses.
Yeah.
No.
They're going to get hot, and then they're going to tank.
Here's what's going to suck.
They're going to get hot.
They're going to win 4 in a row.
Yep. And then they're going to tank.
And they're going to beat the Falcons. They're going to beat the Colts. And then they're going to get what is going to be deemed a quality win. They're going to get a quality win at Minnesota. Then they're going to lose at home to an awful Washington team.
Yeah, I agree with.
And then they're going to lose to a couple more bad teams, and then they hit the gauntlet. Mm-hmm. Then they get the real test in the Packers
and the Titans and the Bucks and
Chicago.
They're going to provide some false hope here for a few weeks. Yeah, that's what will happen. It's fine, whatever. Everyone wants to give me a hard time about the Lions, and what you don't understand is that I am so used to it. It doesn't even affect
it's
me.
So
anymore.
Yesterday for you, like it's
to, whatever. Whatever.
So 2000 and late.
You want to talk some more Mookie Betts here, or would you rather focus in on what maybe some Red Sox players think about?
Ooh,
having Alex Cora back as manager. I'll leave it up to you guys.
So,
can I add something into the mix?
Oh, please,
absolutely.
We have A-Rod making historical comparisons to Mookie Betts from last night.
That sounds like that. More fun. Let's do that.
Okay.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Well, you're at work. Scott Zolak.
I think it's a disaster.
Mark Bertrand.
I know. I want to get it out.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Allen retreats. Here comes Chris Jones, but he floats a pass over the middle. It's going to be intercepted. Dirty Dan Sorensen with the pick. A one-handed grab and the 8th pick of Dirty Dan's career.
The Bills make me want to kick your heels up and shout.
Oh, they're making it happen, all right. Zolak and Bertrand Hardy and Fabito Adam Jones is here. Albert Breer with us for one more segment. Buffalo Bills.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.